Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News. The number of coronavirus cases here in the United States topped the 1 million mark Tuesday, even as several states began taking small steps to reopen for business. Johns Hopkins University says the 1 million count is the largest for any country in the world, where the global number of cases exceeds 3 million. Some U.S. health officials say they believe the actual number of U.S. cases may be higher than reported because of a lack of testing and reporting. Those officials are also warning state governors not to be too hasty to allow businesses to reopen, saying any premature easing of lockdowns and social distancing could lead to a surge in new cases. More than 58,000 Americans have died from COVID-19. Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said Tuesday he expects COVID-19 cases to increase when the country reopens from its coronavirus lockdown. In an interview, Fauci said the number of new cases could be kept low if restrictions are relaxed carefully. He said low would be 70,000 or 80,000 cases. Two men are charged in U.S. federal court with price gouging for allegedly looking to resell 1 million face masks that protect against the coronavirus for at least twice what they are worth. Both suspects were indicted in Eastern New York and Brooklyn, charged with conspiring to violate the Defense Protection Act. Another New Yorker is also facing federal charges for violating the act. President Trump invoked it, making it illegal to acquire what has been designated as scarce medical supplies and hoard or resell them at a hugely inflated price. This is VOA News. President Trump signed an executive order Tuesday meant to stave off a shortage of meats on American supermarket shelves because of the coronavirus. The order uses the Defense Production Act to classify meat processing as a critical industry to ensure that production plants stay open. The order comes after industry leaders warned that consumers could see meat shortages in a matter of days if workers at major facilities test positive for the virus. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden won the party's primary election in the Midwestern state of Ohio Tuesday. Voters used mail-in ballots to make their selections after in-person voting was postponed back in March due to the coronavirus outbreak. Biden has stood alone in the Democratic race since early this month when Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders ended his campaign, leaving Biden as the last remaining candidate. He'll face President Trump in the national election in early November. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton endorsed Vice President Joe Biden, former Vice President, the First Lady, the former First Lady, and the Democratic Party presidential nominee, shied away from wide attacks on Trump in the first 2 years of his presidency, but has often criticized his performance in recent months. She is the latest key Democrat to endorse Biden, following all of Biden's opponents for the party's nomination and former President Barack Obama, under whom Biden served as vice president for 8 years. The International Rescue Committee is warning that the number of COVID-19 cases in countries at war, including Afghanistan, Syria, and Yemen, could exceed 1 billion. IRRC President David Miliband, a former British Foreign Secretary, said 34 nations are at risk because of the double crisis of coronavirus and war. Miliband appealed for an urgent funding for frontline responses. He also accused the G20 group of the world's richest economies of slumbering in their global response to the coronavirus. He strongly criticized President Trump for suspending U.S. funding for the World Health Organization over its early reaction to the pandemic. And Australian officials say the nation will lift lockdown measures effective Friday, making it among the first European countries to do so. Austria has been under lockdown for about 7 weeks, during which time people were only allowed to leave their homes for designated reasons. As of Friday, people will still need to maintain a 1 meter distance from each other in public, and people will be required to wear a face mask in public. For more news, join us at voanews.com via remote. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A number of senior Liberian government officials have tested positive for COVID-19.
COVID-19 is not a death sentence, but what I want to say is that early testing and detection is important because then you can remove the infected persons from the society, and by so doing, you can break the chains.
Information Minister Eugene Nnaboye, the first coronavirus prisoner in Sierra Leone. The U.S. commits $6.6 million to support Kenya's COVID-19 program. Uganda's president criticizes MPs for enriching themselves in the name of fighting coronavirus. Malawi's High Court extends injunction barring the government from carrying out a 21-day lockdown. And Ivory Coast opposition leader Gion Soro responds to his 20-year court sentence.
Alassane Ouattara and his government will not succeed in removing Guillaume Soro from presidential election, which he will win.
Habib Sonongo is the European spokesperson for Soro's GPS party. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senior Liberian government officials have tested positive for the coronavirus, as the government denies reports that President George Weah has also tested positive. The local front page African newspaper quotes Minister of State for Presidential Affairs Nathaniel McGee as saying that President Weah was well and healthy. Among the senior cabinet ministers who tested positive are Justice and Information. The two officials were among about 30 other officials who attended an April 11 joint security meeting. Information Minister Eugene Nnaboye says he wants Liberians to know that being positive for COVID-19 is not a death sentence. Instead, he says he hopes his situation will reinforce the message that early testing and detection is very important to slow the spread of COVID-19.
Just before I got the call from the Minister of Health that I had tested positive, I just got a new bike. I was preparing to go ride as a means of exercise. I usually run, but that's not feasible right now. We don't play soccer anymore as I used to do. So I do feel very well. In fact, when I got to the hospital, yeah, my vitals were ticking. I feel well. And then the doctors also say I'm well so far. I don't have any symptoms, but I'm still being observed by the medical team here, as they are doing with other patients. And I believe that I will be well. I will get out of here very soon.
Where do you think you probably attracted the virus?
Well, I do not know how I got infected.
Because of the international attention to COVID-19, I feel like whenever someone has tested positive for the virus, that person is automatically a danger to society. Is there any particular thing you want to say to people who might have similar feelings like myself?
Well, like I always say, we have to do more with testing. Because once you determine that you are infected with the disease and you seek early care, there is a very high chance of survival. So COVID-19 is not a death sentence. But what I want to say is that early testing and detection is important because then you can remove the infected persons from the society. And then by so doing, you can break the chains. Because if the person is not aware that he's infected and he continues to interact with people, then that's not a good thing. So we need to do more testing, get tested, know your status, and then you can get isolated and get care.
According to some local media accounts, three other senior government officials, I think it's Justice Minister Moussa Dien, the Deputy Police Director for Administration, and the Deputy Drug Enforcement Agency Director have all tested positive for the virus. Is there a concern that this might impact the operation of the Liberian government?
Quite honestly, the effect will be very minimal because the infrastructure of the government is very coherent, very widespread, and very entrenched. So the fact that we have been infected will not cause any significant dent in the operations of the government of Liberia. What is significant is that it has captured the attention of the public, and I think we should use this for the positive, to tell people that this disease is real. we should take the necessary precautions. Next door, the Minister of Justice. Next door, we have the Deputy Inspector General of Police. We have the Deputy Director of the Drug Enforcement Agency, high officials of government. We are here getting care. So it's without boundaries, it's an equalizer. Therefore, we should use this to tell the public that this is very real and we should all take the right measures to ensure that we break the chain of transmission.
Liberian Information Minister Eugene Nambwe was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Sierra Leone recorded its first prison coronavirus case this week when the government confirmed a male detainee at the remand center was sick with the virus. Advocate, a group that has repeatedly called for decriminalizing minor offenses in order to depopulate overcrowded prisons, says the man who fell ill was charged with larceny, a minor offense. Advocates program manager Julia Cisse spoke to Ricky Stryak about the prison situation in Freetown.
There's a case in the prison, and the prison has been quarantined already. The court also has been quarantined. People are not going in there. Then the prison, too, the area he was in has been quarantined. People are not going in there.
Can you tell me any details about why this is concerning, if there is a case in Sierra Leone's prison system?
The prison, you know, people are in confinement, so they are easily exposed to COVID. And especially to outbreaks, not only COVID, but even outbreaks. Because they are in confinement and they are just clustered together, so it is easier for it to spread. And it will not only spread to those who are in the prison, it will also spread to those who work with them, the officers who take it out, and it will come out to the whole population at the end of the day. So it is very serious if such an outbreak should go. The people in detention, such as police cell, correctional centers, remand homes, are likely to be more vulnerable to COVID-19 than the general populace because of the confinement condition.
How did the authorities react to this case in the prison, and do you think it was sufficient?
Well, there are a lot of misgivings on the reactions of the officers as well as the populace. Some are saying it's a political gummy, that somebody wants to escape from the prison. That's why this person with COVID was taken in there so that some people can be released from the prison. Some others are saying, well, it is because they want to eject some prisoners in there. That's why the government has allowed short detentions to be in there. So they are in mixed reaction. But for the prison officers, their immediate reaction was to take the person immediately to the quarantine place, and including those who have come in contact with them, they have been placed and they have been taken to a quarantine place.
How is the rest of Sierra Leone's response, do you think? How is it going there, especially with the history of Ebola being quite fresh in the country? Do you think that's helped people react quickly to this?
Well, with the Ebola, the knowledge gained from the Ebola, that has helped us, in fact, how to react. Even though the populace, really, they are not observing a lot of social distance. Some are hand washing. Some are masking now. At least in the street, right by where I'm standing, I can count out of 10 persons, I can see up to 6 masks. So many people are gaining awareness because of the Ebola. People got that awareness that when an information is released, then of course people will capture that information and act upon it.
That was Julia Cisse, program manager for Advocate. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. The U.S. government, through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has committed $6.6 million to support Kenya's efforts to slow the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. The CDC's funding comes at a time when the number of positive COVID-19 cases in Kenya are on the rise at 374 and 124 recoveries. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Center for Disease Control, CDC, has supported Kenya's Ministry of Health to improve health security, which have laid foundations to rapidly and effectively prepare for emerging disease threats, among them COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. intervention to help Kenya combat the deadly virus comes at a time when Kenya is leading in numbers of COVID-19 positive cases in Eastern Africa. Health Chief Administrative Secretary Rashid Amani, while giving the daily COVID-19 update yesterday, Tuesday, said that Kenya has recorded 11 more positive cases, bringing the number of COVID-19 cases to 374, 124 recoveries, as the number of deaths remain at 14 since the last time death was announced in April 18th.
We have discharged a total of 10 patients. This brings to 124 the total number of recoveries, which is very encouraging indeed. I also want to assure Kenyans that COVID-19 disease is treatable. With proper management and care, patients have healed and reintegrated back to society. Therefore, there is no need for us to stigmatize this disease.
In a statement, the U.S. envoy to Kenya, Kyle McCutter, said that the fund by the U.S. government will be used to procure diagnostic sampling and testing supplies, provide county-level support, expand surveillance of COVID-19, and support health care. Mr. Mani said restaurants in Kenya that are willing to resume work, as announced before, should operate with government-set guidelines.
Only restaurants and eateries have been granted the window to reopen, but only after meeting the requisite standards of hygiene and safety. On the requirement of mass testing of eateries and restaurant workers, this is a necessary intervention to break the cycle to limit the possibility of transmission within such establishments.
Kenya's public health director, Francis Kuria, has given the directives that should be applied by restaurants and eateries that will operate under the Ministry of Health directives.
Anybody coming at temperature of above 37.5 should not be allowed to enter those restaurants and eateries. For the hotel workers, any staff member with a temperature above 37.5 degrees Celsius shall not be allowed entry into the premises. All food workers deployed to work in those restaurants must be tested and certified to be COVID-19 negative by a government-certified laboratory.
At the same time, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission of Kenya has warned leaders of mismanagement of public funds put aside to combat COVID-19. Commissioner's Chief Executive Officer Twalib Mbarak said that the commission is monitoring how public funds is used in fight against COVID-19.
We are telling them that they must account for all the money that they have been given as a result of the campaign against this pandemic. So people should not be mistaken that because of the emergency, county government or other public entity will start taking shortcuts under the guise of emergency. And the commission is on the lookout. It will be monitoring all those who have taken shortcuts contrary to the market value. The commission will take action against them.
Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 29th. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has applauded Ugandans for adhering to government and World Health Organization guidelines to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Speaking Tuesday night, President Museveni said he has discussed with other East African community leaders to devise means for slowing the spread of COVID-19 in the region. Mugumi Davis-Rakarinji files this report from Kampala.
Since late March, President Museveni has come out with over 30 measures aimed at preventing the spread of COVID-19 in the country. The measures include closure of public gatherings, schools, sports activities and border crossings, as well as maintaining social distance. The president said he's pleased most citizens have adhered to the guidelines.
I heard that in prison we have like 2,000 people who were caught trying to defy. So really I thank the Ugandans for fighting this war by listening to the advice. I thank the people in the villages, especially, for their vigilance. They don't allow anybody new in the area, and those who come are promptly reported.
79 people have tested positive of COVID-19 in Uganda since the first case was announced in March. Over 20 of the most recent cases have been truck drivers. President Museveni says stopping drivers would be what he called suicidal and unnecessary because they help in transporting the much-needed products across the region.
If we stop now, how will our coffee move? If the coffee doesn't move, then why should the farmers farm? Why should they farm when the coffee is not going to where it's supposed to be? How about the tea? How about the cotton? How about the simsim? How about the milk? How about the cement from the factories? Like, for instance, quite a number of Kenyans are buying a lot of sugar from here.
Mr. Museveni says regional leaders are much aware of the problem.
I had a long discussion with His Excellency Kenyatta on the phone and His Excellency Paul Kagame on the phone. I also talked with His Excellency Magufuli on the phone on a slightly different subject. But on the truck drivers, His Excellency Kenyatta and Kagame agreed that we can really have a common, our ministers of health can develop a common plan for them. They can even be tested 2 times a month.
The president also praised health workers and reporters for the good work done in the fight against coronavirus in the country. He's expected to address the nation by 5th of May before the expiry of the lockdown. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
In Malawi, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition is welcoming a high court ruling extending an earlier court decision preventing the government from implementing a 21-day coronavirus lockdown. In a ruling Tuesday, the court said the injunction would remain in place until the government has put in place the necessary socio-economic protection measures. The court decision came as the government was downplaying reports that some cabinet ministers have been giving themselves coronavirus bonuses. Luke Tembo is the national coordinator of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He says the government has yet to put in place the necessary economic measures to cushion the poor from the stinging effects of the purported 21-day lockdown.
We still submit, as HRDC and Malawians at large, that government has not come up with a comprehensive package and a comprehensive cushion to cushion the vulnerable and the poor from the stings of the purported 21-day lockdown. Malawians still do not know what measures the government has put in place to make sure that those who depend on hand-to-mouth kind of arrangement would be cushioned from the 21-day lockdown.
What are the implications of this court decision, particularly on the government carrying out COVID-19 measures and also on the coming election?
We are not giving a blind eye to the spread of the COVID-19. We are with government in encouraging people to meanwhile observe all the hygiene measures that the Minister of Health and other stakeholders are preaching. What it means is that government does not have the powers to implement the 21-day lockdown, and that in a way, we think it gives government time and space to make sure it addresses the concerns that Malawians are raising. Malawians are just looking for a comprehensive strategy on how government is going to make sure that people do not die of starvation while on lockdown. On the issue of elections, the Malawi Electoral Commission is still carrying on with the voter registration. And we hope that this is also an opportune time for Malawi to prepare for the presidential elections that are coming up.
Let me say that we have sent several inquiries to the Minister of Information and also the Minister of Health to confirm or deny reports that some government ministers were receiving coronavirus allowances. Let me give you a chance to comment on this.
We have also seen and received reports that government officials, including the ministers, are cashing in on COVID-19. It is frustrating and infuriating at the same time to note that while the frontline health providers are struggling with the essentials that will enable them carry out their job, risking their lives, they can't even have the PPEs. And you hear reports that others are using COVID-19 as a cash cow. It is disheartening. And as HRDC, we are going to make sure and follow up on this. And if it is true, we're going to make sure that this stops forthwith.
Luke Tembo is the national coordinator of the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He is speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Ivory Coast exile opposition leader Gion Soro has vowed to return to the country to compete in and win the scheduled October presidential election. Habib Sonogo, the European spokesperson for Mr. Soro's Generation and People in Solidarity Party, says Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara cannot stop Mr. Soro. A quote in Abidjan on Tuesday sentenced Mr. Soro to 20 years in absentia on charges of embezzling public funds and money laundering. Mr. Soro is also facing separate charges for plotting to destabilize the Ivorian government. Spokesperson Habib Sonogo says the sentences is yet another example that the rule of law in Ivory Coast under President Alassane Ouattara's government is dead.
For Guillaume Soro, this award is not a surprise, and it doesn't change anything in his ambition for Ivory Coast. This sentence is just the last proof that Alassane Ouattara buried the rule of the law in Côte d'Ivoire.
What about the accusations of embezzlement and whether or not sometime back that Mr. Soro had planned to overthrow the government of President Ouattara?
This trial, both in form and in substance, was a real farce and proves that the justice is unfortunately truly under orders in Ivory Coast. The decision of the African Court on Human and People Rights has been violated, as has the constitution of our country. International institutions have been seized. An interim measure has been taken by the African Court. This requires the justice of the Ivory Coast to suspend and cancel all legal acts against Guillaume Soro and his relatives. Alassane Ouattara and his government will not succeed in removing Guillaume Soro from presidential election, which he will win.
If all goes well, barring coronavirus complication, the elections in Côte d'Ivoire are set for October this year. Does Mr. Soro still believe that he will be able to contest the election?
James, thank you for your questions. Coronavirus remains the major concern of Guillaume Soro. This crisis will probably serve as a pretext for the government in place in Ivory Coast to postpone election, which, according to our observation, didn't intend to hold in October. I can say that before this crisis, the voter registration process had stalled, you know, mainly because of the small number of registration centers. Whether the election are held in October or later, I can assure you that Guillaume Soro will indeed be a candidate and that he will be elected.
Habib Sonogo is the European spokesperson for Gion Soro's Generation and People in Solidarity Party. He was speaking with us from the French capital, Paris. And that's it for this Wednesday, April 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.